Welcome to Signs of Life, a podcast about life and literature and lots of other stuff. We're your hosts, Jen
and Elisa.
Welcome to episode 6. Today, we are discussing our Myers-Briggs superpower, and we're also going to talk about which of our letters is strongest.
That's right. And before we get into that, just a point of clarification about our title.
Yes.
Some people have asked if the sign in our title, S-I-N-E, has to do with math and the sign we learned about in geometry in high school. And that is...
I was wondering that myself.
Were you?
No.
And, well, some people have. And no, our title actually has nothing to do with math, although a sine curve goes up and down in a steady way indefinitely, and in a way that's kind of a nice picture for life, you know, the ups and downs of life. So I suppose it can work. But
sure.
Just to clarify what our title isn't, I'll read you a quick definition of a sine curve.
Okay.
Which is this. A curve representing periodic oscillations of constant amplitude as given by a sine function.
So that's not...
That is...
what we are.
That is what our title isn't.
Right.
So,
right.
But if it helps to picture that nice little steady sine curve,
yeah,
we can.
Yeah. How was it going? On that note.
On that note. Good. Speaking of personality superpowers.
Right.
Maybe mine's reading a nerdy definitions.
Yeah, so speaking of Myers-Briggs superpowers, we kind of touched on the idea a little bit with our co-host, or our special guest, I should say, Hitomi.
Yeah.
Because
what did you... She was an ESTJ.
And I sort of assigned her a superpower. I didn't really ask her what she thought her superpower was.
Right.
I just, like, assumed that it was a supercharged BS meter.
Right. And she seemed to like that. I think she agreed.
She did.
That was her superpower.
Yeah. But it's a fun question. Do you feel like you have a superpower?
I've had other people identify superpowers in me.
Ooh!
For instance, my co-host, Jen. But no, I have not really considered myself as having superpowers, so this was an interesting question, a fun one to think about.
Yeah.
How about you, though? I think you have given that some thought.
Well, this all came up because my husband and I were having a conversation about this, and not using that term specifically. I kind of applied the term, but we were having a conversation about how he's an ISTJ, and so he is the one who first used the phrase BS meter in that kind of context, and he just said that he can tell, you know, he just has this like alarm that goes off in his head when people are, when he feels like he's being fed, you know, inaccurate information, like from a salesperson trying to sell him a car or something, you know. So he feels like all these, like, alarms just go off, you know. This is not right or not accurate, you know.
Yeah.
And so I kind of was like, oh, that's kind of your superpower. And I immediately was like, well, I think mine is, you know, being able to tell what's really going on with someone. Like, even someone I don't know very well, I can just tell that something's off. Or, it's going to sound really probably weird and creepy, but I notice people and relationships. And so, like, even, you know, if I'm at church or something and I'll see a couple that I actually don't know at all, but I see that they're married or whatever, I can see how they interact. And I'm like, oh, they're not getting along. Or like, even if it's really subtle, it's just something I pick up on these cues and can tell that something's happening in their relationship, or if they're not being honest about how, like, if someone's saying they're fine, I can just tell. Even if they're a really good actor, I can be like, oh, I don't think you're really fine.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you've seen that those hunches prove to be true enough times that even if you don't have a chance to follow up, you usually sort of trust your gut on that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's usually, I mean, not all the time. It's not always right. I mean, sometimes people are just tired or whatever, but usually I can, I mean, it's, especially if I know someone well, I can immediately tell.
Yeah.
That it's not right. Something's not right, so.
Now, that really fits in with your middle two letters, the N and the F, right? I mean, the N, yeah, kind of the hallmark of being an intuitive is having a good gut instinct about things, and the F means that you're more attuned to others and what's going on with them anyhow. So,
yeah.
I mean, that combo there is what's doing that for you, right?
Yep. Yep. I think it's called, I mean, there's a word that's used that I don't even know if I like the word or not, but like empath is used a lot, which I think implies something kind of supernatural, or, which I don't think it is at all. I just think it's this high sensitivity to like visual cues or like patterns in relationships. Like people typically act this way together when such and such is happening, or,
yeah,
you know, if there's a disconnect relationally or something happening. So, yeah, it's more based on pattern recognition and cues and things like that.
That's so interesting. And something that I've said about intuitives, because I'm not an intuitive, but I'm particularly fascinated by the difference between sensors and intuitives. And when we talk about gut instincts, that's the thing I keep coming back to, is that a gut instinct sounds like it's not really based on anything, but what you're just talking about, pattern recognition, I think is what's really going on with most intuitives most of the time, is that on some level, those patterns are there and being recognized in a way that comes through as just sort of an impression, even though it's actually being fed by lots of experience.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I think maybe it comes across as kind of like weird or even unfounded because it's an unconscious process. So I'm not consciously like pulling up all this information. It's just sort of presenting itself.
Yeah.
But it's not always accurate. So it does have, you know, for people who are strong, like either sensors or thinkers, I would think in particular would have maybe some trouble kind of attaching, you know, value to that.
Some data.
Yeah. Something solid, something that they can see, and that I think that can be harder, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a really good superpower.
It's fun. I feel like I'm kind of nosy with it a little bit, actually, because I feel like I'm in on a secret sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like you know more than you should.
Kind of. Yeah. Yeah, like I know more about people than they realize.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So. Did you watch the show Psych?
No. Oh. But I've heard a lot about it. I kind of wish I had watched it.
It's a good one. My oldest two boys and I are watching through it right now, and I was curious if you'd have a suggestion for what the main character's type is, because he's all about noticing
things like things. That.
Yeah.
Characters like that tend to be like I and something.
Yeah, he's definitely not an I.
Oh, he's not?
This character, no.
Really? Now I want to watch it.
Yeah, you should. It's a good one. He might be your type. That'd be fun.
Ooh, that would be fun.
Well, a superpower that was recently attributed to me was just a couple of days ago when I got to visit New York City with a friend of mine, which we'll talk at more length about that, I believe, in a upcoming episode.
Yay.
That fun trip to New York. But it was a first time in New York for myself and for the friend that I was with. And so neither of us had ever navigated the subway system before. That was new to both of us. And that was something we got to learn and experience together. And at one point, she told me that my superpower was navigating subway systems because it felt kind of overwhelming to her. And I was starting to sort of decipher what the patterns were and where we needed to go and how we needed to do that. But the funny thing is that she seemed perfectly comfortable hailing a cab. We took subways most of the time, but we had one day where we took cabs a few times and she seemed perfectly happy and comfortable to hail a cab. And for some reason that felt really uncomfortable for me to try to do, so I didn't try to do that at all. And she's actually just one letter off from me. She's an INFJ and I'm an ISFJ, and so she and I were actually kind of talking about that, why I felt comfortable. Well, truth be told, I didn't feel comfortable navigating the subways, but it was kind of a challenge I was willing to tackle, and why she felt comfortable hailing the cabs when I just didn't. Yeah. And I was saying that I think the thing about the subways was, even though there were times that it felt frustrating to me and kind of overwhelming and I didn't understand it, and I didn't like the lack of consistency from one subway station to another in terms of the signage and how they were pointing where we needed to go,
yeah,
I still knew that there was an answer to it. I knew that there was a set series of tracks and trains and places that they were going. And if we needed to get from one place to another, there was a way to accomplish it. And so I said that it felt like a scavenger hunt or like a puzzle that needed to be solved. And it didn't feel defeating because I knew that we could solve it. I knew that there was an answer to be found. And it was almost like a game trying to figure out how to get there.
Yeah.
Whereas hailing the taxi seemed a little more random to me.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know that we would have success getting a taxi to come to us if we wanted to. And I think for her, as an N being more of the big picture kind of thinker, she had the sense of, well, let's make this happen. And I am not confident at saying, let's make this happen. But if I know that something can happen, then I'm confident getting to that point. Does that make sense?
That totally makes sense. How fun.
So navigating subway systems, if that's my superpower, I live in Arizona, and have
you
now
have
been to
no
New York once in my life.
To use your superpower.
Yeah, so hopefully that has bigger applications than just that, but.
Well, the problem-solving thing is really cool. Do you like those, like, puzzles, like the physical, like, get the ring off this contraption type puzzles, or like mind game type stuff? Do you like that kind of stuff?
You know, I don't like the get the ring off kind of puzzles because I'm not a spatial thinker. And I, even though maybe a similar concept applies, I always have this suspicion that I actually have to apply some more brute force to it or something. Like there's some physical element to it that I'm not getting that's making it not happen. I don't really actually enjoy those that much, but I always liked those logic puzzles that were grids, where you're like slowly Xing out, like you're going through a series of clues and you're Xing out what can't be until you finally arrive at what it is. But to begin with, you have like 40 boxes and it looks like you'll never be able to figure out who you're looking for or where or whatever, but there is an answer there. You know that you have enough information to get there.
Yeah.
So,
but not the physical. My husband loves those, like, those wooden puzzles or whatever, where you have to, like, get something out. He loves that kind of stuff. I was wondering if it was to do with that first function or if it was more maybe, like, your second function, or I don't even know. I was just curious. I want to hear the power I assigned to you.
So, Jen recently told me that my superpower might be kindly keeping people on track in a group conversation, which is a really powerful superpower.
It is.
To be able to quietly kind of bring conversations back around to the topic at hand.
You are masterful at it, actually. There have been a few times where you've done it to me, even in the podcast. I'm like, she just did that so great. Like, it was so graceful and so just like you didn't even know it happened. It was like stealthy.
Well, if you add stealth to it, that sounds a little more like a superpower.
Yeah, stealth, definitely. Okay. Is the word I would use.
So instead of gently keeping people on track, I'm stealthily keeping people on track.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll change it.
I like that.
Yeah, it's very gracious and very, it's like you have that end goal in mind, and if it's getting off topic or there's a rabbit trail happening or if people are getting distracted or whatever, you're just like, and let's bring it on back. And you don't even notice that it's happening because it's so nice and so just like, it's great though. It's a really good skill to have, I think.
That's so funny. I feel better about it hearing you describe it now.
Yeah, because I don't think I possess that skill. I feel like I'm really blunt, like, okay, and let's stop, and get back to where we were. It's like really abrupt and disruptive. Whereas you just kind of like find these really natural ways of tying things together, and it's brilliant.
That's so funny. Well, yeah. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Well, let's bring it back to the topic at hand. No, just
okay.
This is this is the topic at hand.
You are not using your superpower.
No, didn't. Now I'm going to be self-conscious about it. For anybody listening, this has been a fun conversation, not just here on the podcast, but talking about it outside of the podcast as well. And so we would actually love to hear from you guys what you think your personality superpowers are too. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So chime in the comments or on Facebook or something and let us know what you think yours are.
Yes.
We love hearing that.
It'd be fun.
Okay, so one thing we keep kind of almost harping on is the fact that we don't think that understanding your personality puts you in a box, right?
Right.
And there's lots of ways that we can try to prove that, but we kind of wanted to talk about each of our personalities and how... So I'm an ISFJ, but I'm not 25% an I, 25% an S, 25% an F, and 25% a J, and that makes me 100% Elisa.
Right.
Like, I am stronger and weaker in each of those four, which aren't the whole sum of who I am anyhow. But I, as an ISFJ, may look different than another ISFJ if my introversion is lower and someone else's introversion is higher, or any of the other letters, too. So we wanted to take a little bit of time to talk about that idea. So you, Jen, remind everyone what your type is.
I am an ENFP.
We've landed there.
Oh, yeah. I keep fighting it. I'll probably change my mind again, but I'm probably for sure 100% an ENFP.
So. Which those of us who know and love Jen agree that it's ENFP.
Yeah, most people. Actually, my mom is not convinced. She actually thinks I'm introverted.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Which I don't totally disagree with, but I don't know. I have a close friend who's an ENFP, and we don't look any... I mean, it's not that we don't look anything alike, because that's not true. It's just that... She's extremely introverted. She's like always testing 100% on the scale. And I do not. I'm on the border.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. My mom definitely thinks I'm introverted though. Well, and even my husband is kind of thinking, he thinks I might be introverted too.
Well, and you have a lot of introverted tendencies, but ENFPs, or anyone whose dominant function is extroverted intuition, is less extroverted than all of the other extroverted types. So it would kind of make sense that you'd be close to that middle.
It does totally make sense.
And another thing is that you enjoy withdrawing to think about things.
Yes.
Because you do spend a lot of time in the realm of ideas and concepts, and you like talking through things with other people, but you enjoy the ideas themselves so much that if you can't find somebody willing to talk about those things, you may be perfectly content.
Yeah.
Kind of mulling those things over on your own. And I think that's a thing about extroverted intuitives.
Yes, definitely. Or I'll obsessively research it.
Yeah.
So if I can't.
Which is a solitary activity.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally. But it's like almost like a way of getting external validation or something, or feedback in a way that's indirect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I think your form of extroversion looks different than it does for other extroverts, which means, coming back to this idea of which of our four letters are stronger and weaker, would you say that that E is probably the weakest of your four letters for you? Like the one that least identifies you?
Yes. Yes, definitely. Yeah, because I mean, it's the one that I question the most.
Yeah.
So and especially, I don't know, I guess maybe it's because I'm older. I don't know that I would have questioned it as much in my early 20s. I mean, but I think most people, I mean, not most people, I shouldn't say most people, but even my mom is an introvert. She's definitely an introvert. And she said that even in her early 20s, I mean, she loved to be social and out with friends. And, you know, it wasn't that she, I don't know. So I think there's that energy you have in your, like when you're in your teens and you're in your 20s that kind of make you feel like, oh, I guess I might be extroverted,
right?
Maybe, you know. So there's, or you think you like people, because people think that's the definition of extroversion, right. Is do you like people, or are you sociable, or are you not, you know, which that can be a contributing factor. But yeah, for me, it's as I get older and I've got small children at home, it definitely makes me tired and I feel tapped out. So I think as I get older, the more I do question that part of me. But even looking at my, this is how dorky I am. I mean, I look at my childhood and I'm like, I was like Anne of Green Gables in my childhood. Like, I was very in my head, very idealist. Like, idealism defines my life.
Yeah.
Very high expectations, you know, things up on pedestals. Like, I just had these very lofty ideas of how life should be, what my life was going to, like, things that I should be aiming for.
Uh-huh.
I should aim for that bosom friend and to get married and have kids at a certain age. It was like I had my whole life planned out. And then, you know, when it actually becomes reality, it's like, oh, this is not what I expected. So I would say that is more, I don't know. That's where, again, where I'm kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I wonder, that's the E and the I are, yeah.
Close.
I still wonder. They're close, yeah.
What type do you think Anne of Green Gables was?
I think she was an INFP.
You think she was INFP?
I do. I've seen, again, I'm such a dork. I read so much about personalities and even fictional characters and stuff like that. And I've seen it kind of her analyzed as a character. And she's a very social INFP, but she is very concerned about projecting her own ideal of her own values onto other people. It's not so much about, she's not a very flexible person. Like if you watch the movies or you read the books or whatever.
Uh-huh.
She's not initially a very adaptable or flexible person in terms of, like, if she has, she just has her dreams and her ideas and what she wants. And then she, you know, I don't know. And that's more like a preference of that judgment, that internal judgment over that external intuition. So it's, the argument is definitely compelling. I thought she would have been an ENFP, but after reading that, I was like, oh yeah, I could see how I think I come across as more laid back.
Yeah.
And she does not come across as laid back.
That's
as a
true.
Character.
She's intense.
Very intense, yeah.
That debate. The age-old what Myers-Briggs personality type is Anne of Green Gables debate.
I know. We're discussing it right now.
It's a catchy hashtag.
So, yeah. Anyways, so what about you for that extroverted introverted thing?
Well, some people are surprised that I am an introvert, so I fall closer to the middle on that one. I always have fallen closer to the middle on that one. I am decidedly an introvert. I don't question it, but I, as an ISFJ, along with the INFJs out there, and the opposite of you. ENFPs are among the most introverted of the extroverts, and ISFJs are among the most extroverted of the introverts. So I think you and I both fall kind of close to the middle on either side of that. And one thing I've read about my personality is, which is very true and something I've always observed about myself, is that the larger the group is, the quieter I am, but the smaller the group gets, especially when I'm among close friends, the chattier I get, to the point of over chattiness. And so if I'm with a small group of very close friends, I can talk way too much. But then those same people can see me in a larger setting and I might not say a word. So
yeah,
it does depend who I'm with and who I'm around. But even in those settings where I'm very chatty and... Is gregarious the word? Is that the right word for that?
Maybe.
My brain is failing me on that one. Anyhow, I still have that classic just need to be alone afterwards, whereas some of my more extroverted friends only get filled up more and more and more by those same interactions. So even when I'm in social settings where I do come alive and enjoy the time, I'm tired by it afterwards.
Yeah.
So I'm decidedly an introvert, but I think that's probably the one that is least strong out of my four letters.
Yeah. I've seen, so I can totally attest to the truth of that, because we've been at, like, I've been in gatherings where you haven't said a word, and then I've been in other gatherings where you have talked and opened up, but then I can, and you are enjoying yourself immensely, but then you get so exhausted, it's like you tap out at some point.
In fact, when we recorded our episode with Hitomi, which was a couple episodes ago.
Yeah.
It was late at night when we finished recording, and we were chatting afterwards, and you That's and right. she were both pretty chatty and, like, start launching into a new conversation, and I think it was going on midnight, and I had to be up at 5:30 the next morning, and I just kind of, like, put an arm around each of you and started walking to the door.
Yeah.
And both of you were like, oh, are we leaving now?
I think she was more so like that than I was, but yes.
Yeah.
I was not quite as exhausted as you were, yeah.
But not quite as energized as she was.
Right, I was, like, right in the middle.
Yeah,
no, she's, that's, I love having her around, because I feel like she's, like, the classic extrovert.
Yeah.
You know, she loves so many forms of interaction with people.
Yeah.
Like, even the whole party thing, like, and I just, I don't really, I feel like I don't identify with either side, because I do enjoy parties, but it has to be with people that I enjoy talking to. Because I've gone to gatherings where it's just, like, nothing but small talk for hours, and I literally just want to die. Yeah. And I was noticing that I was at an event where I did know some of the people at this event, and it wasn't a huge event. I mean, there were maybe 30 people. And my son, my youngest needed a diaper change. And so I, like, grabbed him and pulled him into the bathroom, and I sat on the floor and I was like, oh my gosh, it was like this huge relief. And I wanted to, like, extend the experience in the bathroom as long as possible. And it wasn't even the conversation that people were having. It was just, I mean, because it was fine. It wasn't like it was boring. It was just, it was exhausting.
Yeah.
I felt like so much effort and responsibility in the setting. And maybe that's a part of it too, is that, you know, so I was doing that, I was like, this is how introverts feel all the time. And I'm feeling more and more like that. But I think it's because I have young kids. And,
Yeah. I think you introduced that phrase, or maybe someone said it to you, that about maybe you're an exhausted extrovert.
Yes.
Was that you that said that?
Yes.
Yeah, I like that phrase. I think a lot of moms identify with that.
Yeah. Yeah, a good friend said that to me, because I was, like, asking her what she thought. I've been bouncing all of my, like, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Uh-huh. You know me really well. What do you think? She's like, I think you're just a really tired extrovert.
Yeah.
I was like, that's right. Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, I read something recently that said about extroverted intuitives, which is you, is that sometimes they enjoy the idea of a party and speculating who will be there and what they'll be doing and all of that more than they enjoy the actual party itself.
That is, like, spot on.
Yeah.
The party in my head is so much more fun than the actual party.
So you're a rare kind of extrovert.
Oh, yeah. So neither of us really identify strongly
with that first one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I think there are a lot more people. I think most people actually are like that. Or would even, and I know ambivert is not an actual thing.
Yeah.
But I would, if it was, I would say I was an ambivert.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people call themselves that, because,
which would mean kind of equally introverted and extroverted.
Yes. That they like people, they like alone time.
Yeah.
You know, kind of equally. And,
well, and every human being on the earth needs both.
Yeah.
But a lot of us have kind of equal parts.
Yeah.
Both. Whereas we do know those who are extremely extroverted and some who are extremely introverted, but they're not quite as many of them.
I feel like what we should do to kind of help with it, though, because I feel like you had a webinar recently that you did.
Yeah.
And you talked about the difference between, all the letters, but the beginning you talked about, you know, extroversion versus introversion. And it was so enlightening. I mean, I have read about this, like, to a disgusting level, probably. But the way that you explained the difference and how even like starting the day, I think that was the key, was you were talking about the difference between how they start their day and how you said that extroverts, you use like the example of like that they need to listen to music or go for a walk or a, you know, something to kind of get out and
even
sort
run
of be,
errand.
Yeah, running that, and that's what I was like, oh, ding, 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 because I'm going to be revealing probably something really embarrassing. I spend way too much money on coffee. I buy too much coffee. And I was in a habit for a while. I was in a habit for a while of, just, you know, going out every, well, most days. I'm not going to say every day because that's humiliating. But most days where I would get the kids in the car, you know, we'd get up, I'd get them in the car, we'd go get some coffee, and then I was, like, ready to start my day. And it wasn't even so much the conversation with the people.
I don't think that's humiliating. I think that's kind of, like, American.
Well, yeah, probably. But I'm spending, like, a car payment's worth of money on coffee each day or each month or
each
whatever
day.
And
that
each month, so
that's an amazing car payment.
I know, it felt so like typical, like I'm like the stereotypical soccer mom in my like powder blue minivan driving to the store. But anyway, so but it was like, oh, that's why I do that. It like truly is what I need to, not need, but it's filling that need of like starting my engines in the morning.
Yeah, just getting some external stimulation before the day starts.
Because
you won't be at your best until you've had that.
Right, exactly.
Whereas an introvert may truly be at their very best in those quietest early morning hours before all the stimulation starts seeping in.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was a big light bulb moment. Like, oh, that's why I do that. So we should link that webinar because it was really good.
Well, yeah, we should. Thanks, Jen.
You're welcome. I loved it. So the second letter, what about that one?
Well, yes, I'm an S, and I identify pretty highly with that one. I do like a little out-of-the-box thinking. But after a while, it almost makes me sad. Like, I just always reach a point where I kind of want to retreat back to what's familiar.
Mm.
And so I can think that I like dreaming and looking towards the future and being creative. But at some point, I always want to come back to what I know already.
Yeah.
And then coming back to that subway analogy, like thinking about details and noticing details and figuring things out based on details is something that I enjoy much more. So
yeah,
I definitely identify pretty strongly as an S.
Yeah. There's in Phoenix, there's this thing called Escape the Room. Have you ever heard of it?
Well, yeah, I have heard about it. In fact, we might talk some more about that next week because we're incorporating it into an event that our company is putting on.
Oh, I think you'd be amazing at it. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, thank you. I'm intrigued by the thought. My husband went and did it just recently and was telling me all about it afterwards.
I've also done it.
Yeah.
And I was with someone who I think, well, she had done it before, so she kind of knew what to expect. But I felt like as much fun as it was, I felt like my role was extremely limited in that environment because it was so much to do with the details and all of that.
Yeah.
So I think that's an area where you would totally thrive.
Oh.
Whereas I was like, I mean, I remember like holding on to a couple things thinking, I bet these are going to be super important at some point. Otherwise they wouldn't be here. So I'm just going to hang on to it and like maybe just keep reminding people that it's here. And then maybe it'll, like, fit in somewhere, which it did, so it was good.
Oh, that's good.
But putting all of those pieces together was not my strong suit in that environment, even though it was so fun.
Yeah.
But you would be, like, that would be, like, your element.
Oh, that makes me want to try it all the more.
Yeah. I think you're going to love it.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
fun.
So that S you really do feel like is a big... Like, that is a big part of who you are.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is. And you probably feel like N is a big part of who you are.
Yeah, I do. I do. I was reading about the differences again today, actually, in preparing for our podcast tonight, and just there was actually this one really neat post by, I think it was like some college professor who was doing some research at her university and had different students, like, you know, do this test to kind of tell the difference between sensing and intuition. And it was just a picture. And each person had to look at the picture for a minute and then write down what they remember, what they saw, or what they thought about it. And sensors were like, okay, well, I saw, you know, six of this, and the light was red, and, you know, blah, blah. And so very, like, all of the details about the picture itself.
Yeah.
And I looked at the picture and I was like, gosh, I think they're like, this is like a pretty serious situation. It was like I was reading the mood of the characters in the picture. And like I saw that someone was like, there was like dogs playing poker. And like I saw that they were like cheating. There was a dog that was cheating. And the looks on their faces. I mean, I just was like analyzing, like almost like a movie, like what's going on here. I wanted to know what was happening as opposed to, and like the bigger picture, what was that happening as opposed to the chandelier was red and there are three white dogs and four brown dogs or whatever, you know what I mean? So just the perspective was different. And I think I do that a lot. You know, I look at a physical environment or what just is plainly in front of me. And it's very unsatisfying to just stay there.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what's really going on.
Yeah.
So.
And I may look at a picture like that and fear that my interpretation will be wrong, which is probably why I would tend to focus on the details more than the mood, because I wouldn't trust myself to arrive at the right conclusion. And another thing that I did in that webinar was the white background with the three red shapes on it.
Yes.
And it's so interesting showing that to people and hearing the different responses, because they answer pretty down the line, depending on whether they're a sensor or an intuitive. Sensors will tell you that they see a red square, a red triangle, and a red circle, and intuitives will tell you all kinds of things. They see somebody driving a race car, they see a train, they see emotions in the shapes. I mean, all kinds of things come out of these three red shapes on a white background. And it's so funny hearing the different responses, whereas a sensor will tell you simply what they see. But for me, I can see what it is that intuitives are seeing once they've pointed it out, and yet I would never say it in the first place, even if I kind of saw it, even if there was a part of me that like felt like I saw another shape there or another, you know, something represented by those three shapes.
Yeah.
But it almost doesn't feel honest to say that I see that when really all I see is the three red shapes.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
I guess, I don't know, there's a part of me that's like, is it because you're afraid that people are going to be like, what? Whereas if I look at it, I'm like, I mean, I don't know. I'm wondering if the person asking it is like, tell me what you really see.
Yeah. Yeah, like, but I fear it'll affect my credibility if I say something beyond what's just actually there, you know?
Oh, it's so interesting.
Yeah.
I don't even consider that.
Yeah. See, so we're pretty strong on our S and our N here.
Yeah, yeah.
Both of us pretty weak on the I and the E. Strong on the S and the N.
Yeah.
So and then funny. For feeling, am I moving away from N too quickly?
Oh, no. No, no, no. That's I actually struggled with this one because I don't know, maybe it's because I'm surrounded by thinkers.
Yeah.
Like, truly surrounded by them.
You grew up in a family of thinkers. And you're married to a thinker.
Yes. They're all around me.
And as we've established before, of course, you have the ability to think and think well.
This
isn't about being able to think.
Yeah.
It's about how you make your decisions.
You know, it's so funny, too, because so my mom and my brother are both INTPs. And so that first function for them is introverted thinking, whereas my dad is also an ISTJ, just like my husband. And their second function is extroverted thinking, and they're both logic functions, but they operate in opposite attitudes.
Yeah.
And ENFPs have extroverted thinking as a third function, which can come out as in kind of like stressful situations.
Yeah.
And so, but what's interesting to me is that I feel like I can be logical. See, I could say I feel like I can be logical. But when I hear my mom and my brother talk and they go into their, like, framework, you know, like kind of battling of logic or whatever that they do. I'm so out of my depth with that.
Oh.
And it's like amazing to me to listen to them. Just, it's just beyond, it's beyond me. Whereas like I can relate to the extroverted thinking, like the more external, like, well, things are set up the way they are because it just, that's just how it has to be. Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost like that's easier for me to see than, I'm fascinated by what they, how they think, but there's a part of me that wonders sometimes if I do not identify as strongly with the feeling side, although it's so absurd saying it because I value authenticity. I get super frustrated with decisions that are purely based on logic.
Mm-hmm.
If I feel like there's a human component being ignored, it drives me insane.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I definitely feel like I would rather make decisions based on what's right and wrong. Not that they're not mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
But if it's an either or, then I would definitely choose a right or wrong decision over what makes sense or,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Black yeah. and white. So.
This has always been a hard one for me too, because I like to think of myself as a logical person and I think that I am. And like you said, they're not mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
But when the rubber hits the road and I have to look at who is being impacted by a decision and how people are feeling and how it reflects my own values versus just what makes the most logical sense,
yeah.
I'm always, like 100% of the time.
Yeah.
99% of the time, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with how it's going to impact people, how it's going to
yeah.
affect others, how it's going to reflect who I am.
Yeah.
So I can be logical all the way up until that point. And I can value logic when I'm reading something or when I'm watching something. But when I'm actually like face-to-face interacting with people and having to make a decision, I err on that feeling side, not the thinking side.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like reading about the kind of the red tape, like sort of the bureaucratic like system that logic sets up, and how it is like we were just talking about structure and how valuable a system and structures are, but how it also grates on feelers to a degree because it sort of does ignore that. But what about people?
Yeah.
Sometimes, although it's not ignoring people, because it is saying that generally this is going to be better for people in the long run, but
yeah.
then people who are victimized by those things, because they're, I mean, it's not perfect. There
right.
isn't a single system that will fit everybody. So I tend to, like, I can focus on those, like, the outliers that are
yeah.
being victimized by that kind of stuff. And so it's not logical,
yeah.
but it's definitely a pull. It, like, yeah, it's my inclination, I guess.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. I also would like to think I'm logical, but...
You are. You are. And yet, we talked about that imagery of holding the idea up in front of your heart versus out to the side of you, and that feelers hold ideas up in front of their hearts because they identify their ideas with their identity.
Yes.
And thinkers don't. And
yes.
so if you shoot a hole in the idea of a feeler, you shoot them through the heart, whereas if you shoot a hole in the idea of a thinker, it doesn't hurt them.
Yeah.
It just affects the idea itself, and they can reevaluate and move on. And
right.
When I look at that imagery, that is spot on
yes.
accurate for me.
Exactly.
Much as I would like to think that it's not.
I, exactly.
Yeah. Definitely attach my ideas to my identity.
Agree.
Yeah.
Agree. Yeah, that's a good image.
So we both are logical feelers, but definitely feelers.
Definitely feelers. Yes. Yeah. Definitely.
And then that last one, for me, the J, I identify with that pretty strongly. I think this has come up before, that I'm less of a J when it comes to our planning and scheduling. I've learned to be adaptable and spontaneous because I'm married to somebody who's a P and have kind of learned to just roll with it and
yeah.
Not get to it. Well, I don't make the plans in the first place, because if I do make plans, I get attached to them and then they're hard to let go. But if I
yeah.
sort of leave my schedule open and leave room for adaptability, then I feel comfortable doing that. Whereas in my environment, I very, very much crave order and go to lengths to create order in my environment.
Yeah. I think the whole JP thing is so, I know we talked about it last time. It's so mm-hmm. interesting to me because I keep coming back to, and see, this is where I come up, I think where my extroverted intuition is coming in, because I'm like, there are exceptions to the rule. And I know there are, I know many J's who are really messy and I know P's who are really organized. And so I feel like there's gotta be a better explanation than like external order, but then there's something in the stereotype as well. You know what I mean? In that general explanation that, well, generally J's are this way or P's are this way. So
and it actually hasn't been my experience that I know lots of organized P's and lots of disorganized J's. I know yeah. practically none who break the rule.
I know. Well, I think, well, I'm really bold about asking about types too, though.
Yeah.
So I feel like I can, or I observe other people. I don't know. I want to think more about it and talk more about it later, but I will say that I definitely identify with being a P, even though I keep wanting to say I'm a J. And that I really do, like you asked, I think it was last time, about if I can relax before work needs to be done. And yes, I definitely can relax before work. I would prefer to wait till the last minute. I'm definitely a procrastinator and I have to force structure on myself to like, and it never lasts. I mean, the structure lasts for like a week and then I'm like, done.
Yeah.
Either I need a break, quote unquote, from all my structure that I imposed on myself, or I'm just bored and need to try something else. So, yeah, I can definitely sit down and like read or watch a show or whatever, you know, to relax before something needs to be done. I think P's are, they are very productive. It's just not in the way that a J is. So like my husband is a J and he's very methodical and he paces himself. Not all the time. I mean, he would tell you that he doesn't work up to his own standards sometimes even, but I can tell that he's like frustrated because he knows he should be more paced and methodical. And that's actually how he prefers to work. And when he doesn't do that, he gets mad. Whereas I work in bursts of energy, so I will, like, in a day or two just, well, usually it's just, like, a day less, but, like, I will, like, make my house, like, pristine in a day. It will go from chaos to pristine.
Uh-huh.
And then not want to deal with it again for, like, a week or two.
Uh-huh.
I mean, longer. If I could go for longer, I would go as long as I possibly could.
Yeah.
So, and working in those bursts of highly energetic, like, productivity, that's definitely my preferred.
Yeah. And that's very P.
Very.
Because, yeah. P doesn't mean not doing those things. It's just a different method of doing those things.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That burst of energy kind of method of doing things. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And flexibility. I mean, externally, I prefer to show flexibility to the world. I prefer to be easygoing. I prefer to be, to come across as, I don't care. Sure, just, you know, everybody. It's like, I don't want to have an opinion. We were actually out with some friends the other night, and I started kind of expressing some opinions that I had. And I really regretted it afterwards because I don't want to be known as a person who has all these, like, really strong opinions if it's going to interfere with, like, relationships, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. It's like, I feel like I have these really strong opinions inside, but I don't want to totally, like, I don't want them to get in the way if it's not important enough. If it's something, because what I was expressing was not important.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So, if I have a really strong opinion about something that I would say is not important, then I want to just not
express it.
Yeah.
And there's that F.
Yeah.
How will this affect other people? And is it worth it?
Yeah. Because I will think about that afterwards. Like, I should not have gone there. I should not have said that. Which it probably didn't matter, but, you know, in my own head. Yeah.
So would you say then that N is probably your strongest letter of your four, and E is your weakest, not weakest, but least identifying of your four.
Yeah, I always test strongest on N. And then the others, I mean, I think I said this even before when, in another one of our episodes, that I definitely think I'm an NF. It's the other two that I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I do know, but they're not super pronounced.
Yeah.
Whereas you probably are just like, yep, I'm for sure all of this.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. I haven't really questioned it.
Yeah.
But I would say those same first two. The S is probably the strongest of the four, and probably the I is the least pronounced of the four.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that about you too.
Which is why my superpower has to do with details.
Although I don't feel like your S is that, which is so funny because I was thinking about it on the way over here, how I feel like you kind of ride the line between S and N. And I don't know, because I feel like you're more interested in discussing things that I'm interested in, which sounds funny, but I feel like most ISFJs I know are not interested in talking about things that they're really sweet and will listen, and then they're like, oh, that's great, and back to reality. Whereas you're more accommodating and you act at least genuinely interested in whatever wild hair thing.
I am interested, and that is the one area where I have wondered about, because I think the world of ideas is bigger to me than it may be with some. Like, I think outside of the box thinking and creativity and being unique and loving change and moving towards the future at a quick pace, like, none of those things identify with me at all. I think enjoying the realm of ideas is probably the one where I feel more affinity with the end side of things. But talking about nurture and what you've grown up with, like, you were saying that you grew up in a family of T's and you're married to a T.
Yeah.
Well, I grew up in a family of N's and I'm married to an N. And so it could just be nurture in that case, that I have been around that my whole life and have learned to kind of enjoy communicating that way.
When you learn to respect the other perspective, because, like, I've read, like, it's really hard. Like, you can, almost any pairing will work to a degree. It's when a husband and wife couple don't share S or N, that it can create difficulties because you see the world so differently.
Right.
It's almost like your lifestyle and your decision-making processes can be different. But when you have such different views of the world, it's almost like you're speaking different languages, which I think is absolutely true.
Yes.
But then, because, you know, I've been married to, you know, we've both been married over 10 years. And then you grew up in a family of N's, and I feel like my husband's family, I really, you know, respect them, and they're all S's. I feel like I'm respecting their perspective more and more, even though I don't get it or I don't trust it as much as they do. I'm trusting it more, and I certainly respect it because I can totally see the value behind it. So it's not my preference, but I certainly see the value in the other perspective, which is helpful when you have the different. I mean, it's hard. The differences make it difficult, but I think you can get to a point where you're like, you see the validity and the need for the other side and other perspective.
Right. And that's where our nurture is so important, and why our personality is only part of who we are and what our tendencies are, because that's our nature. It's our hardwiring, but our nurture is such a huge part of who we are and can be so strongly affected by those things. So.
Yep.
It is about that time, as we've come to learn, for a call to come in, and we do indeed have a caller on the Signs of Lifeline.
I wonder what they're going to say this
time. I wonder
time.
Who it is.
I wonder who it is, too.
Let's find out.
My superpower is that I'm never bored when I'm left alone with my own mind, so I can just ask myself questions about anything and everything, and ponder the answers to those questions quite happily, basically endlessly. And I'll give an example, because tonight, actually, I asked myself the question, I wonder if I could make a beautiful painting of a pizza. And then I just pictured beautiful paintings of pizza in lots of different versions, and really enjoyed coming up in my head with pictures of pizzas that I thought were beautiful. And I wondered if I could make a picture of a pizza that was so beautiful it would be worth hanging up on the wall. And I can ask myself questions like that to no end, and I'm never ever bored asking myself silly questions like that and pondering the answers.
Well, once again, our mystery caller dropped some really good insight on us.
As always.
That's a pretty cool superpower.
It is a cool, I'm like jealous of that superpower a little bit. Feels very, it's like it very innovative.
Yeah.
But I wonder if like she'll actually paint that painting.
I would really love to see that pizza painting. I hope she does.
I hope she does too.
That's pretty cool. Mails it to us.
Please, that'd be great. That send it to our
fan
Science
art.
Of Life. Yeah, fan art. Love it. Fan
yeah.
art. Yeah. All right, well, we have reached the drinks and winks portion of our podcast, Elisa.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have a drink and or a wink to share?
Yeah, can I go a weird direction with a drink?
Yes. Well, how cool. Weird is it?
So weird. I don't want to talk about coffee or wine or even anything.
What else is there?
I know. Some people drink that water stuff. I don't know.
Oh, man.
No, this came up another time. We briefly referenced unpasteurized milk, and I said that my son wanted some for his birthday.
Yeah.
And so Jen recommended where I could go get some, and it's actually, I mean, I purchased it from the store, but it comes from a dairy of a family that we know, actually.
Yes.
And so my oldest son, he turned 12 this past weekend, and I went and got a half gallon of unpasteurized milk and gave it to him for his birthday because he had requested that. That's not all we gave him for
That's
his birthday.
That's so funny.
But we did give him some. And he was very sweet and allowed his brothers and me to all have a little bit of a drink from it too, but Aww. He pretty much downed that whole thing himself.
Did he really?
But I had never actually tried it before and was kind of like rolling my eyes about it, and then I had just a very small glass of it and it really is better.
It's like kind of
by
amazing.
Like by a long shot. It was so good.
I know. And I'll tell you, that particular brand, I'm just going to be honest, when they first came out, I was so excited because they were selling in the stores, which is not normal. But here in Arizona, it's legal to sell raw milk in the stores. And initially when they first started up the dairy, it was like, okay. I remember tasting it and thinking, oh, it just doesn't taste as good as some other raw milk that I've had. And recently my supplier,
it's totally legal and legit.
Totally
you guys.
Legal. I was getting it from someone's trunk. They
Your
moved.
Supplier.
They moved. And I was really bummed because it was really good. That was the milk that you guys had in my house. And so then I was like, well, I guess, you know, just for convenience sake, I'll try this because I've actually had heard that it improved, and I brought it home and I was like, this is so good. I mean, it was like just as good as what I had been getting. So I was really pleased.
Oh, good.
And I was nervous because I had recommended it to you, which sounds horrible. But then like I tasted it and I was like, oh, I'm totally going to get this again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was so good. I mean, he just kept going on that it was the best milk he'd ever had. And I always wonder how true those things are, like how much better those things are. But we had gotten some eggs from my husband's aunt's chickens. She had given us a dozen eggs, and the kids knew that we'd gotten the eggs, but I hadn't told them anything like to expect that the eggs would be better or anything like that. And I made fried eggs the next morning, and all the kids went on and on about how it was just the best eggs they'd ever had before. I mean, there just really is something about that whole farm to table concept that it is better food. I'm not prepared to spend $7.50 a half gallon of milk, given how fast
I know,
we
right?
go through. And I still have some, like, I haven't really researched the whole unpasteurized milk thing. I think my first opposition to it came because I heard, you know, I heard a couple times of people raising money to provide pasteurizing machines for areas where there was a lot of like disease and illness, and how like pasteurization was kind of a lifesaver in these certain like poorer areas where they hadn't been able to eliminate the bacteria before. And so I've always thought of it as like a really healthy and good thing. Like, why do we not want to kill off the bad stuff? But I realized that there's a much bigger story to it than that. And that there are areas where that pasteurization is absolutely needed, but there are other ways of getting milk apart from needing to do that. So I actually can't speak to the whole process or the whole controversy or why it would be legal or illegal, but in terms of taste, that's all I'm addressing now. In terms of taste, it really was good, and that was so such a treat for our son to have that.
Oh, good. So that's not really like wine or coffee.
Nope.
Milk, yeah.
No, I thought I was going to go weird
this time. Raw milk.
I needed to follow it up since we mentioned it on another episode.
And what about a wink for you? Do you have any winks this week?
Yeah, I went and got my nails done last week for the first time in kind of a long time.
Good for you.
And
they're pretty. They're pretty for all of our listeners. They look very nice. They're
very just kind of natural pink. And this sounds like just kind of a spoiled wink because it's a worldly thing. It's just a luxury getting your nails done. But gel nails are just really the way to go. If you're going to spend the money to get your nails done, spend the tiny bit extra to get the gel nails. Because for me, if I spend money to do my nails and I don't do gel, I feel like I mess them up the second I walk out of the salon. And so it was money wasted. But when I do the gel, they just like last and last and last. And I really...
It's true.
Really like them. I was just having that conversation with someone the other day who'd never done gel before. So that's my wink, is to gel nails, because these things last.
They do look good still, and you had them done last week.
Mm-hmm. And traveled a lot in between, all over New York. And
that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's really good, actually. That's a good point. Just spend a little bit extra.
If you're going to spend the money anyway, I feel like it's money wasted if I don't do it. So what was the point of spending it in the first place?
Whereas yes.
That little extra makes it very worth it.
That's a good one. That's a really good one. So my drink is that I...
Is it milk?
No, it's not. Although I had a similar experience with that
apple juice or something?
Milk this week. No, I shared a beer with a friend the other night. And I'm not normally a beer drinker. But I like beer, okay. I definitely prefer wine. Or like fake beer, like Apple Orchard or something. Mm-hmm. But I had a beer at Gordon Biersch with a friend. Yeah. And it was quite tasty, actually. I really liked it. I don't even remember which one it was. Or what it had in it. Or it was like red. It was like a reddish color.
A reddish colored beer from Gordon Biersch. Go get it, everybody.
And it was really tasty. I really enjoyed it, actually. There's something about a cold beer.
Yeah, well, from a brewery when it's on tap.
Yeah. Yeah.
That farm to table. It's basically the same as pasteurized milk.
Basically, yeah. Yeah, no, it was really good. I really enjoyed it. And my wink was, well, I had one and then you said I should do a different one. So I'm actually going to do two winks tonight, yes. So the first one is that I babysat for a friend today. And we do a lot of swapping back and forth, this other friend and I do. And so it's not a big deal, but, it's been a little more stressful because we do it so much now that our kids are like starting to show their true colors to, so like my youngest likes to throw fits. And so he started throwing fits for her and, you know, instead of being on their best behavior, and that's kind of vice versa. But today, before they came over, I went through my house and I locked my bedroom door. I locked the door to my kids' bedroom, which I have never done before. And I refused to give them access to the backyard. And it was the best, easiest time I've had babysitting in a long time.
Now, when you say that you locked their bedrooms, you don't mean with them inside.
No.
You prevented them from going in, right?
Yes. because they like go in there and we were having this conversation. Like they do the same thing in her house. They like go and jump on the beds. They never jump on their beds. They do the same thing with her. And yeah, they get everything out. They find like baby powder and like cover the room with baby. I mean, it's astounding the things that they can be, the ways they can be destructive. Mm-hmm. Anyways, it was like this amazing, like, just giving them those boundaries and saying, nope, you're not going in here, you're not going in here, you're not going in here. It was, like, amazing.
Great.
So lock all the doors.
Lock the doors.
If you're babysitting, lock
every door. A couple episodes ago, your wink was to keep Sharpies far out of reach of small children.
I'm just figuring out this parenting thing. So maybe everybody listening is like, yes, how did you not know to do that? But I just learned it, so...
Good one.
Yeah, it is a good one. It is a good one. The other one is the show.
Oh yeah.
I'm gonna recommend another show. Because I actually did, I mean, I had heard a couple people watched Death Comes to Pemberley and really liked it, but I didn't realize how many people had watched it.
I think quite a few watched after you recommended that.
Yeah. And it was just as good as I said it was.
Yes. Everyone agrees.
So I'm going to recommend another one that was recommended to me on Facebook. So maybe other people would have already watched this because they probably saw the same recommendation. But it's for another Masterpiece Theater.
Wait, is it British, thing. Jen?
It's totally British. I don't think anything I would recommend would not be British. It's Poldark.
Can you spell that?
It's Poldarc. C-K? Or maybe just K. It's probably C-K.
Poldark.
No, maybe just a K. Yes. Anyways, it's the main character's last name.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
And can you tell us who is in this show?
I told you that it was the handsome hobbit.
No.
Which one? What
you
did
said
I say?
It was the hot dwarf.
Oh, yeah, the hot
the
dwarf.
The hot dwarf from the hobbit. Is who's in this one.
Well, that's the truth. Yeah, Aidan Turner is
who it turns out is actually a normal.
He's like a normal, of course, tall a normal human man. Being, yeah.
Yeah.
So he's in it. And then actually from Death Comes to Pemberley, the actress who plays Georgiana.
Okay.
Or Georgiana.
Yeah.
She's also in it and is a main character, and it's wonderful.
Is it a movie or a miniseries or a TV?
It's like a
show?
Downton type thing. Okay. So they had a whole season their whole first season was last year, and then they are in the middle of airing their second season. I think they just had episode 4 last night, which I have not watched yet. So, yeah.
All right. Poldark.
Yeah.
And
watch
as usual,
it.
We will have links to our winks. Oh,
yes.
That rhymes too.
Oh.
Drinks, winks, and links. We'll have those on our website.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us.
Yes. Thank you so much for listening again.
Yeah. And share your superpowers with us and which of your letters you most identify with. We want to hear from you too.
We do. We love hearing from you guys.
Yeah.
Bye for now.
Bye for now. This episode is brought to you by Showit. Are you stuck in a boring website template? Experience true creative freedom with the drag and drop simplicity of a Showit website. Get started for free at showit.co.